Hey, the It's Time for Coffee podcast is powered by the Converge Podcast Network. Hey friends, it's time for coffee, and I'm your friend and host, Jeanette. I'm so glad that you're here today. I hope you know by just pressing play on that podcast app, you have a friend with you. My hope is that as you listen, you will know that you are heard, valued, loved, and not alone no matter what stage of life you're in. I hope that you're subscribed so you never miss an episode, and it would mean the world to me if you left a rating or review. I'm so glad you're here, and I cannot wait to introduce you to this week's guest. Today, I'm sitting down with my new friend, Mary Morantz. Mary is the author of the new book, Dirt, that calls us to remember where we came from. This conversation is filled with so much truth, and it was just a really fun conversation. It left me feeling so happy and filled up afterwards, and just like when you have one of those coffee dates with a friend that you're just like, man, I'm so thankful to know you. That's how I felt, and I hope that you'll feel the same way after this conversation. I hope that this conversation encourages you to look back at where you came from. I know that can be really hard sometimes, and I'm just really praying that you will be able to sit with those feelings and feel some gratitude at the same time. One of the things I'm learning in this season is that we can feel all the feelings, and that's okay. I can feel really happy and really sad, both and. And when we look back at where we came from, there may be pain, but I believe that there's hope too, and we can hold both. I'm really excited for you to listen in and meet my friend Mary. So friends, grab your cup, fill it up with whatever you want, and let's dive in. Hey y'all, I'm so excited to be sitting down with my new friend, Mary Morantz, and we are talking all about her new book, Dirt. And it is going to be an incredible conversation as we are in the series, It's Time for Personal Growth. And I know that can kind of like be intimidating sometimes, or you think, shoot, are we going to a conference and we're going to be told that everything about our life is wrong and we need to like start waking up at 5 a.m. and drink 15 cups of water and like work out 3 hours a day? No. We're talking about personal growth and the easy things that we can do to propel our lives forward to just live a sweeter existence. Like, I'm not trying to sell you on anything except for Jesus, but I just want you to know that personal growth is good and it's okay. And so we're going to talk about it today. So Mary, thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, Jeanette, thanks so much for having me. Like we said, when we hopped on, I already feel like we're going to be friends. And just hearing that intro, I'm like, I need a friend like that in my life who can tell me like, you don't have to, you know, get A plus pluses in all these categories. Like you can just have a sweeter existence. I was like, oh, I can breathe again. That's really good.
I mean, I've fallen for the personal growth where I'm like, if I'm not up at five, I'm failing. And I can't live that way, right? Like, it's too hard. And I struggle often with striving. Like, I don't, like personal growth to me sometimes equals strife, like striving, and that equals strife in my life. Like, it doesn't equal growth to me. So just a little bit sweeter existence is kind of easier.
Yeah, I love that word, striving. That's a big theme that I'm sure we'll talk about in a little bit in Dirt. It's that going from this place of striving and achieving and running for your worth to rest, you know, like what it looks like to just like rest in who you are. So I love that sweeter existence. I feel like that's like such a good message for this time of year too, you know, where it's just like we all kind of want to like slow down and breathe and enjoy the sweetness of like we've worked really hard all year and we've made it, you know. So I love that.
Awesome. Well, thank you for being here again. What's in your cup?
It is my third cup of now sort of room temperature, maybe a little bit stale coffee from our coffee maker. It's like Starbucks blend. We grind the beans because we're very legitimate.
Oh yeah, you gotta be.
And then some almond milk, and you know, it's definitely we've been hanging out at the podcast mic today, so it's definitely like I'm ready for. It is time for coffee, it Jeanette. Is. You're right. It is time for coffee.
Absolutely. Well, to be totally boring, we sat down and like I texted you like, okay, I'm ready. And you're like, give me 1 minute. And I was like, okay, cool. And then I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so thirsty. Well, I didn't have time to make a cup of coffee. So I just have a cup of water. So it's time for coffee in my heart.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, coffee is mostly water, so that's feel like you're 90% there.
You're right. Okay, Mary, can you tell us a little bit about who you are, what you do, and maybe introduce your book?
Yeah, so my name is Mary. I live in New Haven, Connecticut with my husband, Justin, and our three very fluffy golden retrievers only one of which retrieves. And we are in an 1880s fixer upper by the sea that we've been working on for about a decade, and it's almost finished. And I am a podcast host. I have a show called The Mary Moran Show, and I am now officially author. We released the book just a couple weeks ago. The book Dirt is my very first book, but is also the book I've known I wanted to write since I was about five. So just a little bit of a lifetime in the making.
Yeah.
And I gotta be honest, it's really cool to finally be at that place where I can say, like, you know, because it becomes a little like gray area. Are you an author when you sign the contract, when you finish the manuscript, when you hold it the first time, or when it's like available? And now we've done all of them. So it's official.
I love that. That's so good.
The book Dirt, as the hashtag, and also the website, thebookdirt.com. Dirt is in the most elevator pitch version of itself. Single wide trailer on the mountain, top of a mountain in rural West Virginia. Dad was a logger. Mom cleaned houses. To Yale Law School. First in my family to go to college. My parents both barely graduated high school. And, you know, I feel like that's a story we've heard and we like, and we're drawn to these stories of humble beginnings, but then look at the places that you'll go. And so Dirt is a different take on that story, where it's not so much an, oh, the places you'll go. It's more a, let's return to the places where we start. Let's go sit cross-legged in the muddy, mildewy mushrooms growing out of this carpet in a single wide trailer, sit cross-legged and sit through the edginess for a while of what it looks like to grow something eventually beautiful out of what feels like this dirt, this mud in our story.
Yeah. I've been listening to the song Seasons by Hillsong like over and over and over. And my friends on Instagram are like, golly, leave us alone about this song. But it says, from seed to sequoia, like it's so beautiful, because without that seed, that tree doesn't grow. And it actually is a Christmas song. So it says like from seed to sequoia, so there would be no cross and there'd be no manger. Like, it's kind of like the essence of the song. So beautiful. Yeah. But we have to have the dirt, right? A seed doesn't just grow. Like, the Bible says, like, if we just cast seeds out, like, they'll either fry up in the sun, they'll sprout a little bit, but they won't grow. So without the dirt, that seed won't grow. Man, I would love to hear just a little bit about your thoughts. As we're talking about personal growth and dirt, where do you see them parallel?
You know, what's interesting is we were having dinner with some friends of ours, and my friend Heather, who's a pastor, said something to the effect of, dirt actually has all of the microbes in it that sustain life. And so the things that make up dirt make up life. Mm. And I just like laughed at that, because I was like, that is so God. That is so God, because, you know, one of the taglines of the book says it always started with dirt, and everybody's like, I love that, but what does it mean? And I'm like, I don't even know. It's just like this message God gave me. And so I started really digging in, like, what do I mean by that? And on a macro level, on the widest level, when I think about all of the substances, you know, God has got like his like tool belt of creation. He's making the sun and stars and universe and water and sea and air and all of these things. He could have chosen to create man out of any of them. Moonbeams and stardust and unicorn fur could have been the, you know, the magic concoction. Yeah. And instead it says man was created out of the dust of the ground, which is really just dirt. And I picture this moment of God leaning down to breathe life into the dust of the ground, the dirt, and that vapor, you know, that vapor of his breath mixing with the lowliest of substances. And the creation of man springs from that. And in so many ways, for all of our stories, it started with dirt. And if God can do some of his best creating in the dirt of the ground, it's just such a God wink to me that he chose to then include all these microbes of life in the dirt to remind us where we come from. And it always started with dirt reminds me that from dirt we came, into dirt we shall return, to dust we shall return, that our time here is fleeting. And these gifts and these callings that we have been put on this earth to go fulfill and walk out, like the clock on the wall is ticking, and we get a certain amount of time to do these things. And for me personally, my story started with dirt because my dad's a logger, and he would come home with mud caked on his boots, and it would fall off in just entire chunks in the shape of his legs or the chevron pattern of his boots. and mixed with this brown carpet where you couldn't tell where carpet ended and dirt began. And in so many ways, you can't tell where that trailer ended and my story began. And, you know, I think that's the kind of thing that this world will tell you, you have to hide away. You hide away the trailer. I don't know when growing up in a trailer became such a thing with stigma, but it is. And so you hide that away.
Right.
And you hide, you know, I used to ask my dad, gosh, can't you wash your hands again before we go to the football game? Like, why can't you ever get that grease out from under your nails? And the scars and the calluses and all these things. And so if you actually look in the back of dirt, there's a picture of his hands, because that's kind of the journey of like, let's try to hide it away and let's be ashamed of it and let's put this away. And the fact that the trailer's on the cover and his hands are the bookend in the back, and we're going to put all of these parts that made us us front and center and say, this is who I am and I own it. It's not where I stop. It doesn't define where I go, but you better believe that that is that dirt that I was created from. That, I think, is the journey of dirt. You could say single wide trailer to Yale Law School, but really it's about owning this mud in our story. We think will make people turn away from us, but really when we get honest about those parts of us, it makes them lean in. And that's what I think growth is. Growth is saying, I'm owning all these parts that made me me.
Oh, man. I mean, I don't want to end the podcast there because this is way too short, but golly, like that's so, so wise. And so we talked before we started recording. I'm from Alaska. I was from a super small town in Alaska. And it is so often that we kind of, yeah, like, well, that was that chapter and it's past now. And now I go here and I've joked many times about being a Southern Baptist pastor's kid and the stuff I've had to shake off from that and some legalism that I've had to like figure out like, well, like, did you just really say this? Like, does this really matter? And I think that there's stuff to be said when we kind of shake off that dirt a little bit, like, okay, what can be kept and what needs to go or anything like that. But I think so often you're right. We shake off our past because that's not where we are. And there's that saying like, don't look back because that's not the way you're going. But that's how we were made. Like our past holds stories for our future. And our past holds reasons we do stuff a certain way, and they hold lessons for us. I'm a huge Disney buff, and it makes me think of Mufasa again, you know, like in Lion King, where he was like, no, those stars are our fathers before us, and there's lessons to be learned all throughout this way.
Yeah.
One thing I love that you said is we have to own the muddy parts of our story. So what does that mean?
We have to own the muddy parts of our story is a very like short mantra way of explaining the real hope and dream for this book. You know, I love that line from Mark Batterson that talks about, I hope that every person who gets this book in their hands, it's an answer to a prayer. And when I think about the prayer that I want answered when people hold dirt in their hands, it's that there's a whole generation of women who are clenching their fists, digging these palms into their nails into the places where their wide open palms used to be. They're like holding on so tight, trying to hold it all together and present this perfect picture, this I have it all together picture that, you know, I sort of picture it. And the very first line of dirt is, his hands look dirtier than I remembered, laying against the crisp, white, sterile sheets of a bed tucked away in the far-flung hospital corners. And so that is very intentional. I'm a big believer in first sentences having punch. And that one in particular is very intentional because hospital corners are like tucked in really tight and really with precision. And they're about holding it all together and holding it all inside and presenting this very pristine, without blemish, without flaw surface to the world. And then the people in your life, the story in your life comes in and leaves these muddy fingerprints all over it. And you can't get away from it. And we spend so much time trying to be, I said, I wrote this book for the most put together woman in the room, the one, whether she's the best dressed or the most capable or the leader or the social butterfly, you would never guess. She's probably the woman you walk in and you instantly are like, I don't know if I would like you very much. I don't know if we would connect very much, because she's the one who's working so hard to hold it all together because she believes that's the standard, the bare minimum standard she has to hit just to qualify to walk into most rooms. So she's the one you would never know is hiding a hard part of her story. And this whole generation of women in clenching these palms so tight and clenching these fists so tight and trying to hold it all together and trying to keep it hidden, trying to keep it tucked all in, we have no idea how much energy we're wasting just to stand still, just to stay put, just to have one side of us look really good. and when they can release that energy. You know, I see this on Facebook all the time. It always hits me right when I need it. And it's like, stop, soften your shoulders, unfurl your brow, take your tongue off the roof of your mouth, unclench your jaw. And I'm like, dang it, I was doing all of those things and I didn't even realize it. And the second you do, you realize, man, when all of that energy is freed up, it is going to propel a whole generation of women into their purpose. This, oh, let me hold it all together. Let me be the most put together woman in the room. No, let me be messy and vulnerable. And, you know, I said this recently on Instagram and it went a little crazy. It said something to the effect of, it is much easier to be admired from a distance for the pretend version of us than it is to be loved up close for the hard, messy, broken person we might actually be. But man, does that woman just run with freedom towards her purpose.
Yeah, I think it's something a friend and I were just recently talking about of the personas that we can see on the internet, right? Like we see what people want us to see. I mean, and yeah, even as a podcaster, Instagrammer, author, whatever, like I obviously like want to put my best foot forward, but my hope is when somebody sees my Instagram and then bumps into me at the grocery store, it's not like, oh, yeah, that's who you are. It's, oh my gosh, she was just as kind to me as she would be on Instagram. Like,
that's right.
I don't want to be holding something together. I have too much going on. I have too many things I'm juggling to try to hold on to this persona that I'm afraid will be sought out, you know, that will be like caught basically. And so my hope is always that if people meet me outside of this space, that they'll just know like, oh yeah, that's just Jeanette, obviously.
Yeah.
So I make sure to talk, like, my kids are insane. So if you see me yelling at my kids, you know that there's a reason.
Yeah. You know, I love that because there's a really good quote that says something to the effect of, I want a life that feels better on the inside than it looks on the outside. Yeah. And I hear people who will say, I'm an introvert at heart, but introverts are boring and people don't like introverts. They're too quiet for people. So I never want to let people know that. So I really turn it on. And like, I have my like stage persona and all this. And I just think to myself, there's no part of my brain that has enough energy to do that. Yeah. You know? And one of the biggest, you know, similarly, one of the biggest compliments I ever get is when somebody talks to me in person, they're like, oh my gosh, you talk just like you write.
Yes.
If they just see me on an Instagram caption or a book or a blog. No, I really do talk like that. I really do have this like cadence and this like, we're going to talk about deep introspective things and 80s pop culture. That's going to happen. It's just going to happen.
And mine is Disney. Like we're going to pull in Moana and Mufasa.
Yes. I love that. As long as you're good with hanging out with Molly Ringwald and the Goonies and She-Ra. And also, well, we'll talk about this later probably, but new throwbacks to the 80s, like Cobra Kai. Maybe we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, let's hit that for sure.
You're listening to the Converge Podcast Network. And now, a message from a network supporter.
I want to jump in really quick to tell you about an online parenting event that you or someone you know definitely won't want to miss. We're living in some strange and difficult days right now, wouldn't you say? And I think it's safe to say that all parents feel the pressure to lead their homes well, especially now. Wouldn't it be nice to feel the freedom to check that perfectionism at the door and become a perfectly imperfect parent that God called you to be? It's time to sign up today for the Perfectly Imperfect Christian Parenting Event that will be held on October 23rd through 24th. This is a completely digital event that was designed to give parents the practical and spiritual help needed to grow as leaders in the home. And it's in an easy, accessible digital form. With more than 40 available talks, you'll hear from amazing speakers like Aaron and Jamie Ivey, Mark Batterson, Jonathan Pitts, Nicole Zakowski, and the Duck Dynasty Robertson family, and so many more. Tickets are only $49, and we invite you or a parent that you love to register today for this digital Christian parenting event. Visit perfectlyimperfect.org to sign up today. Okay, let's get back to today's show. The that is like one of the best compliments is when my devotional just came out a few months ago and a friend said, I haven't texted you recently because I've been doing your devotional and it's like having coffee with you every morning because it sounds like you and it is you and I've forgotten to text you. I'm like, well, please text me. It wasn't really me. It was just my words. But it's such a compliment to be known for who you are. And I think one of those things, and this is something we can talk about, I would love to get your insight on, to be known for who we are means we have to know who we are. So how did you walk through your identity while you wrote Dirt?
You know what I love about this? And it just made me, I love conversations like this when something that you say just makes this like white orb of light in my brain fire up, which is just has just happened. And that is when you're saying like to be known, there is that saying to be known is to be loved and to be loved is to be known. And for so many of us, what we're terrified of is if somebody knew us, then we wouldn't be worthy of love. Yeah. If they knew the real us, if they knew all the hard parts, all the messy parts, we would not be worthy of love. And that's one of the biggest things that keeps people stuck in their muddy story. It's that shame operates in a currency of leaning in and whispering, you're the only one.
Yeah.
You're the only one. You're the only one who struggles with this. You're the only one who ever fights with their husband. You're the only one who ever has money problems. You're the only one who ever says they're going to get healthy and then doesn't. And we're afraid that if we talk about these harder parts, then people are going to turn their eyes away from us on some sort of sympathy shame on our behalf. And I use that turn of phrase in Dirt very intentionally and on purpose because it's a play on the word sympathy pain that husbands will sometimes feel for their pregnant wives, where they think they know what the proper symptoms would be from carrying something heavy and trying to birth something new into the world. And so when you're walking around with this story, you fear, and you don't irrationally fear it because you've seen it play out enough times. When people hear about a trailer, they go, well, thank goodness you got out. Thank goodness that's not you anymore. My goodness, look what you've done with your life. Let's skip right over that. I'm uncomfortable. It's sitting on my shoulders. Let's move forward. And, you know, what really we do when we say, actually, bring your eyes back to me, look me in the eye and let me tell you this. This is my story. And it's not shame. That's the appropriate response for you to have. It's grit. It's tenacity. It's empathy. Let me tell you about the kindness this forged in my heart. Let me tell you about the character that it built. Let me tell you about the person that it made me. Bring your eyes back up to me so that I can tell you these parts of my story that you think the proper symptom for me carrying these heavy things and trying to birth a new beautiful life out of them is for you to look away so that you don't see me stumble. I want you to see me rise. Mm-hmm. I want you to know that this story built me.
Yeah.
And I want you to know every part of me and know that I know I am still worthy of love because God has told me I am still worthy of love. And this story that I don't understand, he's going to put words to it. These messy parts, he's going to use it. He's going to use it to do things in my life I can't understand and in other people's lives when they don't look away. When they lean in and they say, that mountain, you know, that famous line from Morgan Harper Nichols, perhaps you've been given this mountain to show other people it can be moved.
Hmm. Well, because I'm a firm believer that God places things in our life, and I've said this many times on my podcast, that God places things in our life so that we can overcome them, so we can tell people it's overcomeable. Or to say, hey, I've done this, let me hold hands with you and we can do this together. That to me is the truest form of friendship.
Yeah.
But I also know, and speaking from experience, sometimes we share our dirt. Sometimes we share what it is and we get left.
That's right.
Sometimes that happens, but that is not on us. That is not a reflection of our character or a reflection of our shame, right? That that is something else. And that's something that like, I want to like group hug our friends and say like, if that has happened to you, you are worthy of grit to stand up and to shake that one off and keep going and to find somebody who will say like, man, I'm not sorry that happened to you, but let's fight this battle together. Like, I've battled something similar. So come on, like we can get through this.
Yeah, I love that because it reminds me of something I've probably pinned on Pinterest 4,022 times at this point, which says something about like, stay away from people who make you feel hard to love. And, or just pay attention when somebody makes you feel hard to love. And when, if somebody, if slash when somebody has walked away from you or turned away from you because there was mud in your story, or even because of just some characteristic, gosh, you're so deep. Why do you have to be so serious all the time? Does it always have to, do we always have to cry? Yes, Barbara, we always have to cry. You know what I mean?
That's how I express my feelings, is I cry.
So if somebody has made you believe that there's something that's like, I'm not talking about like something that maybe you need somebody like to iron sharpen iron and like you do want to work on. I'm talking about something that's like fundamental to your personality and your character and how God created you. If there are people in your life saying that's not enough of something, that's on them, not on you. And, you know, I wrote something recently that was talking about your people should be mirrors, not microscopes. Microscopes hold you in place for in one place for easier scrutiny. Mirrors hold up a reflection to show you who you are and who you're becoming. Learn that difference early and often. And if somebody's scrutinizing you and picking apart things that are who you are and how God made you, that's a microscope. And you need to clear that out. Get those mirrors around you.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh man, that's so good. I'm a big proponent of like adult friendships. And I've just recently wrote something that said like, we all just kind of say like, oh, adult friendships are hard and that's just how it's going to be. And I'm like, no. We flip the script. We're putting that down and we're saying like, adult friendships don't have to like, no. We are going to say like, adult friendships are worth my time. Adult friendships are worth the battle that I put into them. Or adult friendships, like, friendship in general is life-giving, and it holds us accountable. It holds us in front of a mirror and says, hey, come on, like, let's try better. Let's try harder. Let's grow together. It sharpens iron as iron sharpens iron. Like, that is what relationships do for us. So I love that. Yeah. And I think you're right. If we're being held under a microscope and being told, that's not the way I would have done it, it's like, then that's not maybe a relationship for you. And if you're being in a relationship that's like, move past your past, forget it, ignore it. It's like, well, why? Why does it have to be moved past, right? Our past has created us. And I mean, we go over Jesus's past every single year. Like, we know where he was born. We celebrate where he was born. Nobody ever once was like, oof, thank goodness you got out of that manger quick. It's like, no, like we celebrate the manger. Like we literally, this is an interesting thought. I'm like thinking through this out.
White light of brain.
White light. We did it again. Why is it so easy for us to celebrate Jesus's small beginning and humble start? But when we look at like our lives, it's like, well, I might have started here, but look where I've gotten.
Yeah.
Why?
And you know what? I would even add to that. Like, I'm sitting here thinking about like, we don't go yada yada the cross. Let's skip right over to Sunday. You know what I mean? Like, here is somebody being beaten down by the world into the, you know, the lowest point of suffering and carrying heavy things to his, you know, to his own, carrying his own cross. And we don't turn away. I mean, maybe if we were actually seeing that and it was so brutal, we would. But we understand, you know, this death to self that happens before the thrill of hope takes flight. And I don't know. I think about what it must have been like for him carrying that cross and carrying heavy things, and not only doing that, but doing it on full display.
Yeah.
And what our lives would look like if he didn't do that. So openly.
Yeah.
You know, he said, I'm going to go away to this mountain. See you in 3 days. Yeah. See that, you know?
Bees. I promise it'll be cool when I come back. I promise. Like, no, we got to experience. I mean, we didn't get to experience, but we get to experience it year after year. And I think this year in 2020 was really interesting to like, to acknowledge and celebrate the cross. And then, especially since it was the beginning of like the shutdown and the pandemic and all these things, to sit in the silence and the darkness of Saturday, knowing Sunday was coming, like thrill of hope. Like, it was such a beautiful thing. And I think even as we get ready, we're in the last like quarter of the year, even as we get ready for Christmas, that's where I want to sit. I want to sit with that thrill of knowing, man, this has been a hard season.
Yeah.
But there's thrill. There is hope coming. So
that's good. That's really good. That darkness of Saturday, that's maybe the most profound description of 2020 I've heard.
Amen. Like,
yeah.
There's got to be something good coming, right?
There can only be 12 hours in a day. Or 20, how many is it? It's 24. That's it.
It's been a long year.
It's been
a long year.
Yeah.
Man, I've just really enjoyed this conversation, and it's time for me to ask you, like, what is it time for in your life right now? It's a time for coffee. What season are you embarking in right now?
Yeah. Well, when we were hopping on, and you were kind of giving me a heads up of the flow, and I liked when you said, you know, because the Bible talks about to everything there is a season. Mm-hmm. So I feel like in my life, it's time for the harvest, which sounded much more like, I don't know, ominous than it's time for the harvest.
Harvest. Winter is coming.
Whatever. But I just feel like, you know, for the last year plus, I have been planting seeds. And I had a call. I did an IG live with Allie Worthington the other day, and she said, we're planting seeds in the darkness. Mm. And I feel like I've had a year of planting seeds in the darkness and toiling and tending and pruning and doing all the other gardening things I don't know much about. And, you know, just like waiting for the little, you know, things to pop through the dirt for growth to come from that. And I feel like this is so random, and I don't get into this too much, but, you know, September, normally that would be a harvest moon, but depending on where the moon falls with the equinox, the autumnal equinox, September actually ended up being a corn moon, which talks about an extended period of abundance and harvest. Mm-hmm. It's like getting two harvests, like almost out of it. Now I'm not like super getting into like the moon or this or that, but I just really liked that metaphor of like the timing of the way things line up and the timing of the seasons changing and the time, you know, that for such a time as this, God knew this year, this crazy year was coming. He knew that I was going to be launching a book I've thought my whole life about in the year of our Lord 2020, which is the weirdest year any of us have probably ever known. And when we are expecting famine, when we are expecting the crops to wither, when we're expecting to be separated from the vine, he says, actually, I'm going to give you a double dose of harvest. So I'm ready for that. I'm ready to, I've worked as if it depended on me. And now I think I'm ready to pray and put my hopes as if it depends exactly where it depends, which is on God.
I love that. That's so good. And I think there's something so holy about working for a harvest. I think that that was exactly what they did in the biblical times. That's exactly what our farmers do now, I think. I'm not a farmer. But I think that there's something really sweet in saying, like, I'm going to plant this stuff. I'm gonna be as obedient as I can, and I'm going to work for your glory. Mm-hmm. And then all I can do is wait and see what you're going to produce here. And so I love all of these like metaphors with the dirt and the seeds. Yeah. Like, I'm totally here for it.
Yay.
It's so beautiful. It's so beautiful. So, man, yeah. What is something that you've been obsessed with lately? Like, Red Watch Church.
We were going to come back to Cobra Kai. Do you know what Cobra Kai is? Most people, I mean, I just found out about it, and we like binged season one really quickly. We have like two episodes left in season one. So Cobra Kai is the continuation of The Karate Kid, like 40 years later, 35 years later, whatever. When Danielson and Johnny Lawrence are middle-aged, Danielson has a car dealership, and Johnny Lawrence, who was the baddie in the first Karate Kid, is really just like struggling with his life. And so he starts a dojo again. Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
A karate dojo. And it has all of this amazing nostalgia and throwback and 80s music. And it's filmed very much in that like 80s cheeseball sort of way. But like, it's also like really good at the same time. And I just kind of going back to like, for such a time as this, like, I do not think it's a mistake or an accident that my book Dirt, which has all of this 80s references, because I was born in 1980 and like I talk about She-Ra and the Goonies and Mario Kart and all of it. Like, that's coming out at a time when like the 80s are having a moment.
They are.
You know, like, you're right. Rainbows are back. Jean jackets are back. Like, what is that show? The Stranger Things. Like,
you know,
straight up 80s nostalgia. Cobra Kai, all this stuff. They're bringing back all these shows, like Saved by the Bell and everything. I'm like, oh, Dirt.
It's time.
Dirt and Karate Kid, basically.
I love it. I'm trying to think of We just, oh my gosh. Did you watch the Father of the Bride? Oh my gosh.
I totally did.
It was so good. So precious. And my husband, like, I was kind of like drying my eyes as I was like finishing it. And my husband's like, what is going on? And I was like, do you know how when you hear the Jurassic Park theme song, like, you know exactly what it is? I said, I didn't know that I so deeply knew the Father of the Bride, like, music.
Yes.
Until it happened. And I was like, it's time.
Yes.
Like, it was so sweetly done. I was just such a fan. And Benjamin Platt, oh, I just, like, I'm here for him. 100%. So, that's what I was obsessed with. I was like, this is so good.
And yeah, it was so good. And all through, like, Zoom, or, I mean, I don't think they had nicer cameras or whatever, but just so well done.
So well done. Like, what a sweet, like, reunion. What a cool thing. There's something else. Oh, and this is like 2000s, but I'm currently reading the Twilight book.
Oh, yeah.
We're just throwing everything back.
Yeah, that's right.
Just really excited about it. The new Twilight, and then I told Jesse, like, I'm probably going to have to reread all of the Twilights now because it has stirred back up all of those memories.
Yeah, those were very readable books. Like, those in Hunger Games, each of the Hunger Games books, I read each one of those in one sitting. I could not stop.
Yes.
Yeah.
Same.
Yeah.
Mary, I have enjoyed our time so much.
Me too.
This has been so sweet. And I'm just like, you know, this is how I hope everybody feels. And this is how I hope the podcast comes across. But like, when you like leave a coffee date with a friend, you're like, I'm so fortunate to know that person. That's exactly how I feel right now. And I'm just so thankful
Me
for
too.
You.
White light all over the place. It's just so good.
Oh, so great. Okay. Where can we buy your book? Where can we follow along on all the things that you're doing? Tell us how that we can all be friends with you.
Yeah. So thebookdirt.com. So thebookdirt.com is sort of the central hub for the website. We have sample chapters you can download. We have the book trailer, the video. You can actually go inside the trailer I grew up in, see my dad. You know, you can see what people are saying about the book. And we also have like the links to all the places you can get it, or you can just go straight. It's available everywhere. So Amazon, Target, you know, all the different places, local bookstores. Yeah. And then it's at Mary Morantz for Instagram, whereas that's mostly where I hang out, I would say. And, you know, send me a DM if you listen to this episode and, you know, got something from it, or if you do get the book and you're liking it. We're hearing from, honestly, I will say, like, most people we're hearing from, they read Dirt in about a day or a day and a half. The record is 4 hours.
Oh.
And so it is a very readable read, kind of going back to the Hunger Games. So we're hearing that. We're hearing that, you know, it's kind of like just the message they needed in 2020, this message of hope and forgiveness and redemption. And that even if you didn't grow up in a trailer, you'll find yourself in the pages. So yeah, check it out.
I love that. And friends, don't shake off those muddy parts. Like, learn from them and grow from it and be stronger for it.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid to look back. That's the lesson that I'm taking from today's conversation. Hey, if you love this episode, would you take a screenshot and share about it on your social media, in your stories or on your feed, however you want to or however you feel comfortable? I would love for you to tag me so I can see it and see how you or where you listen to podcasts. When you tag it, tag me on Instagram at Jeanette Tapley, or use the hashtag It's Time for Coffee Podcasts, and I will be sure to share it as well. I can't wait to see where you listen to your podcasts. Thanks so much for joining me for coffee today. I hope that we're already friends on social media, but if we aren't, come find me on Instagram at Jeanette Tapley or on Facebook at The Jeanette Tapley. If you have any questions about the show or what's coming up, be sure to check out itstimeforcoffeepod.com. I hope you have a great week, and I can't wait to see you back here next week when it'll be time for coffee. Bye, friend.
This show is part of the Converge Podcast Network.